Hi, this is Dr. Linda Mintel. Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast of the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. Our website is filled with more encouraging interviews, all accessible at myfaithradio.com. Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mintel, the relationship doctor, and I'm here along with my co-host, Chris Weigel. And every weekend, we're here, we're doing life together, and we're glad you've joined us.
That's right. Happy weekend again, Dr. Linda. And I've got a question for you. Have you ever met anyone who doesn't think they should possibly maybe just lose a few pounds? Well, today, we're going to talk about losing weight, but from the viewpoint of folks who have lost 100 pounds. And Dr. Linda will throw in her weight loss comments. And you've written several books on this topic, Lose It for Life, Press Pause Before You Eat, and Breaking Free from Compulsive Overeating. This should be a great show.
So losing weight, it's really hard for most of us. I think we'd all agree with that. There's an abundance of food in our country. Years ago, I actually did a documentary, Chris, called Surviving Abundance.
Wow.
And it was about all the food choices that we have, and most of them are not healthy food choices. And it talked about the way the body works to stabilize weight. You know, it's just not easy to be the weight you want to be. But some people have lost a lot of weight. They've been very successful at reaching their weight loss goals. And so we're going to look at their tips, as well as throw in some of the science along the way about weight loss.
That's right. And here's a quote from someone who lost 70 pounds. They said, "After losing 70 pounds, ridding myself of joint pain and finally feeling just good to be me, I know that a real wellness change, the sort that lasts long term and is about way more than just the pounds lost, is a process."
You know, that one is so spot on because weight loss is a process. So if you've tuned in thinking we had the magic weight loss bullet, we don't. I wish we did. We'd make a lot of money if we did. And anyone who tells you that they do, they're not really being honest with you. Weight loss is a process with a lot of moving parts. Listen to this quote. Here's another one, Chris, from a patient who lost 100 pounds. He says, "Change for me didn't happen from actually losing weight. Or I should say, it only happened in conjunction with a lot of reflection and, let's be real, loads of therapy."
Wow.
A person after my own heart. "These things are pivotal to understanding my relationship with food and making long-lasting changes."
And you have worked with lots of clients in the area of weight loss.
I have, for
more than 25 years. And you would probably say a hearty amen to that comment. It really is about changing your, here's the key word, relationship with food.
And that's why I wrote the book, Press Pause Before You Eat. You have to change more than just focusing on calories. You need a mindset change, including the role and the relationship of food in your life. So people who've lost a lot of weight confirm this change in the way that they think. So they approach food differently. They think differently about the food.
Who would have ever thought we have a relationship with food?
We do. That's the subtitle of that Press Pause Before You Eat book.
Right. Well, let's get into what those successful weight loss people have to say. The first tip will not surprise you, Dr. Linda. They said they've stopped turning to food when they're stressed.
Important, but really not easy. So when food has been a source of comfort for most of your life, if you had a chaotic childhood and you started overeating or you were hiding food, you were gaining weight as a young person, maybe you used food to deal with the stress that was in your life, whatever the circumstances were, if food was your go-to help for stress, you've learned to stress eat. And believing that you don't have to turn to food when you're stressed is a mind change that you have to make. And you will be stressed, but the idea here is don't go to food for stress. Find other ways to cope with that stress. And you have to be very intentional in making this change.
Well, here's what Laura, she's a 49-year-old publicist, here's what she said. She lost 150 pounds. "One day, I got on the scale and it read 300 pounds. Something triggered in me and I decided to lose weight. I developed a daily food plan and I was able to stick with it. I could tell myself, 'You're not hungry,' and then I would believe it was true. After a while, I truly wanted the salad and not the fries, and this was a revelation. I don't turn to food when I'm stressed now. My habits and relationship with food have truly changed.
So there's testimony of that right there. And isn't it interesting that when she made that change, she stopped craving those fatty foods and she started wanting the salad? That revelation is necessary to not only lose weight, but to keep it off, too. So good for Laura for understanding that. You know, Chris, have you ever munched your way through an entire bag of chips because you were stress eating?
As if, do you think I'll admit that now on the radio?
Right.
No, but one thing I do is I find myself wanting to go to fast food.
There is convenience in that, and that kind of food does taste good because of all the fat and the things that they add to the food. But really, a lot of times we just do it because it feels good, and it's kind of a reward for that stress eating.
Now, on the other side, some people don't eat when stressed, especially if they are... We're talking really stressed out.
Yeah, I know. When I was dealing with my dad's death, there was food everywhere, like there is when there's funerals.
Right.
And I just had no interest in eating at that time. In the short term, I think what happens is stress shuts down your appetite. Your nervous system sends messages to the adrenal glands. They sit on top of your kidneys to pump out the hormone epinephrine, which most people know as adrenaline. And so that adrenaline helps trigger the body's fight or flight response. And so you get this kind of revved up physiological state that temporarily says to your body, you don't need to eat, focus on other things.
So then why do so many of us want to eat when we're stressed? Because it does seem to calm us down. There's a survey from the American Psychological Association that found that 1 in 4 people in the U.S. use food to comfort themselves during stress. And during the holidays, it jumps to 1 in 3.
Okay, so there's a different biological story here when stress stays with us and it's persistent. So what I just described a few minutes ago is when you're under short-term acute stress and your body regroups and says, we're going to fight that threat that we're feeling right now. But when stress is prolonged and the adrenal glands release another type of hormone called cortisol, cortisol increases appetite and it also may ramp up your motivation in general to eat more at that time. So once a stressful period is over, cortisol levels should fall. But if the stress doesn't go away, which is the case with a lot of people, or if the person's stress response gets stuck in sort of an on position, then that cortisol stays elevated and a lot of people want to eat and then they use food to de-stress.
I think in general, we associate snacking and relaxing with eating and comfort. I mean, think about how often we come home, the first thing we do is go to the cupboard or the fridge to eat because we're stressed. And for me personally, it's when we're bored.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because I used to do a lot of women's retreats. Mm-hmm. And at all these weekend women retreats, they would have tons of like candy and like they'd have tables set up for this. And I'm thinking, you know, they're coming to this retreat to relax. And part of that includes all this food and all this candy.
And then there are comfort foods like ice cream that work really well.
Well, ice cream is the winner. Mm-hmm. It's the winner in foods that calm us down. It's high in fat. It's high in sugar. It calms us down temporarily. You know, it works on the brain, but it is short-lived, and the stress hormones kick back up, and then you crave it again, and then you get in this vicious cycle of eating and then wanting more of it. So not a long-term solution.
You know, when you look at, let's say, Sharon and I, when we stress eat, if we do, she always wants different food than me.
Yeah, so there's a gender difference there, and women tend to crave more sweets, and men like hot dishes, like pizza and steak and homemade foods. So here's the theory. I don't know if it's really true, but when I was doing the research for my book, it says that when men are stressed, they want comfort foods that remind them of mom. So maybe that's it.
I just want mom's chocolate eclair cake.
Which would be the sweets, actually, right?
Yeah. Well, give us the press pause ways to combat stress eating. We know it begins by deciding not to eat as a response to stress. What else helps?
So a good thing is to delay eating for 20 minutes. If you can wait 20 minutes, the craving will pass. Write down what you eat each day, and then you'll end up eating less, because when you have to write it down, for some reason, psychologically, people eat less.
It's reality.
Yeah. You're having to put it on paper. Yeah. Change your routine so you aren't conditioned to eat at certain times in certain places. So if you always go past a fast food place, don't go past it. Do something else. Eat only at the table. Pay attention to the physical sensation of hunger. One of the people said that you read their quote. They said if they weren't hungry, they decided they weren't going to eat. And then remove all the tempting foods in your house.
Several steps, but they are practical. And they're good ideas to break that stress eating cycle. It is interesting that the people who lost over 100 pounds also said that they are still working on their relationship with sugar. And when we come back, we will answer the questions, is sugar addictive? Should we cut it out altogether? More when we return on the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
Anger happens. It's part of being human, but it does not need to control or even ruin your life. Hi, I'm Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, with a quick prescription to help you break free from anger. Whether you are seriously out of control, hot-tempered, or just easily annoyed, why not try this biblical strategy to conquer those destructive reactions? A good place to begin is to admit you have an anger problem, and then begin the tough work of finding the root of your anger. The next step is to identify the triggers, you know, the cues that set you off. Your trigger might be other people or situations or even certain thoughts that pop into your mind. Next, calm down. It's like pressing pause on the moment. Take a breath. Count to five in Spanish or maybe some other language. Get your thinking brain back into control. And then finally, create a reaction plan. So in advance, think about ways to combat those familiar angry feelings. And then practice your plan. With God's help, you can break free from anger.
For more powerful strategies to break free, get Dr. Linda Mental's book, Breaking Free from Anger and Unforgiveness, available online. Welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show, and today we're talking about tips from people who lost 100 pounds or more. And if you want more help on weight loss and emotional eating, go to Dr. Linda's website, drlindamental.com. There you will find blogs and ways to connect with Dr. Linda on social media, and I encourage you to check out her website and sign up for her free e-newsletter that comes out once a month. Dr. Linda has also written many books on weight loss and stress eating. Press pause before you eat relates to the very things we are talking about today.
Well, you know, Chris, I've been working with people and food and eating for over 30 years in clinical practice, and you learn a lot from the patients by looking at what they do and then also studying the science.
So lots of practical knowledge to be gained by watching folks.
Yeah.
Well, before the break, we mentioned sugar as a possible addiction, and there's quite a bit of controversy over this topic, and many people feel that they are addicted to sugar. Listen to this quote from one of the people who successfully lost weight. They say, "I'm still working on my relationship with food. It's a process that ebbs and flows. I eat in a flexible way with a lot more vegetables and cook most of my meals. In addition, I struggle with anxiety, and that affects my relationship with food. When I feel anxious or stressed, I still reach for sugar."
Yeah, and then here's another person's take on this. She lost more than 100 pounds, and she says, "As a new homeowner, I went through home repairs in August and spent the entire month shoveling a donut or two into my mouth. Usually, the best thing I can do for myself is to not buy anything sugary. I'm working with a therapist to overcome sugar cravings and find new ways to relieve anxiety."
For some people, sugar seems to be a downfall when it involves losing weight.
So here's a statistic from my book. So the average person consumes 31 teaspoons of sugar a day. That's 19 more than the recommended maximum of 12 that the USDA says should be the limit. Most of us are really loading our bodies with too much sugar, and this does stress our bodies in terms of how much our blood glucose levels have to contend with on a regular basis. So studies show that under stress, a little sugar can calm you down. But large amounts of refined sugar especially create rapid fluctuations in blood sugar, and that does stress the body.
You know, I saw a headline recently from a press release that said, "Sugar is as addictive as cocaine and heroin." And one article even pondered why people go into prison for selling drugs but not for selling Oreos.
Well, that was a college press release, okay? This notion that sugar is highly addictive comes from certain researchers. There is a neuroscientist, Joseph Schroeder, who said, "Our research supports the theory that high-fat, high-sugar foods stimulate the brain in the same way that drugs do. It may explain why some people can't resist these foods despite the fact that they know they are bad for them." But here's the thing, Chris. If the neurological effect of, let's say, Oreos makes them so impossible to resist, then how is it that most people manage to resist them?
Right.
And only consume them in moderation, or like me, not at all, because I don't even like them. But the idea that people can take or leave cocaine or heroin in the same way that they can take or leave an Oreo is really inconsistent with research, and that is very different. So one of the issues here is that these sugar studies are done with isolated, bored rats. Sort of not unlike people who look to who look for drugs, right? But unlike rats and monkeys, people are capable of reason and foresight, even if they don't always use both of those, as well as emotions like guilt and regret. So we also have considerable control over our own environments, and the rats don't in those studies. Anything that provides pleasure or relieves stress can be the focus of an addiction. It's not just the rewarding thing, but also involves the person's relationship with it. So that depends on a lot of factors like personality, circumstances, values, tastes, preferences.
You know, tolerance and withdrawal are the hallmarks of addiction. Does sugar act this way with us?
So when you think about something being addictive, it does involve dependence, which is characterized by two symptoms, which you mentioned, tolerance and withdrawal. Tolerance is the need for more and more of the drug in order to get the same effect. Withdrawal effects are unpleasant symptoms that occur when the drug's taken away. So here's a quote from Tracy Mann, a professor of social and health psychology at the University of Minnesota, that addresses this issue of sugar being the same as drugs like heroin or cocaine. She says, "Despite anecdotal claims, neither tolerance nor withdrawal has been shown scientifically in humans with sugar or any other nutrient or food, with the possible exception of maybe caffeine. And although there is some evidence that rats can become sugar dependent under certain specific conditions or circumstances, tolerance has not been convincingly demonstrated. And applying rodent models of addiction to humans is controversial at best."
I would think so. But doesn't sugar addiction follow the mental health guide to diagnosing addiction?
The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which is used to diagnose substance use, has 11 criteria for substances. Mm. You could say that if you eat too much sugar and have tried and failed to cut it out from your diet, you would technically qualify for a mild case of substance use disorder, provided that those symptoms are causing you a lot of distress, because that's one of the criteria. But even if you use this definition, a severe case is unlikely, because even if you had all four of the symptoms that you need to diagnose substance use, the remaining ones, tolerance and withdrawal, are less likely to apply to sugar. So most sugar-loving people won't have two or more of these symptoms. It's not going to interfere with their life. It's not going to interfere with important activities. It's not going to create social problems. A lot of things that we use to diagnose drugs. So this is a really fine line. I think it's a little bit of an overreach from my point of view, and you may differ with this, to say that sugar has the same addiction as other substances. So here's the bottom line. If sugar bothers you and causes you to overeat, cut back on it or eliminate it and see how you do. You'll be fine if you don't have sugar. But I don't want people to think that they have no control over sugar like an addict. It may prompt you to overeat for other reasons, not just the biological ones. So it's fine. Eliminate it if that's your goal. And certainly refined sugar in large amounts is not good for us or good for our overall health.
Let's go back to the mindset changes that happened with people who lost more than 100 pounds. They really began to see food differently. And this is actually the premise of your book, Press Pause Before You Eat. Change the way you view foods as fuel and as needed.
So here's what a 37-year-old payroll supervisor at a grocery store said. And this person lost 255 pounds.
Wow.
That's a lot. "Since losing 255 pounds, I avoid sweets and most baked foods, except for chocolate once a week. I eat out much less than before and exercise regularly to keep my weight level. My relationship with food has changed. I'm still hungry all the time." So listen to that. Isn't that interesting?
Still hungry.
"I'm still hungry all the time, but I try to view food as fuel. When that doesn't work, I know I'll have chocolate soon, or maybe I'll swap in chips instead of a salad with my sandwich to avoid a complete meltdown. The chocolate is almost like a reward and a reminder that none of this is to punish myself. Swapping to a less healthy option from time to time suppresses the urge to completely binge. I realize the contradiction of viewing food as fuel, but also using it as a reward. It's a constant struggle, but I now see myself as strong and healthy."
You know, in there she mentions chips and chocolate. And I think one of the problems is that we don't think that nutritious food can be flavorful, like chips and chocolate. But you can learn to cook in ways that really satisfy and bring out flavors.
So I want to read a comment about someone who lost 185 pounds. He's a four-time James Beard nominated chef, which means he's really good at cooking.
Right.
If you don't know what that means.
Have him over.
Yeah. So here's what he said. "Since my weight loss, my relationship with food has deepened, if that's even possible. I care more than ever about what goes into my body and those bodies that I cook and develop recipes for. nutrition had historically always taken a backseat to flavor. I've learned that those things don't have to be mutually exclusive. My mission now is to work to define new ways that I can deliver flavorful, bold food without consequences to health. I love that.
It's a great mission because this is one of the factors weight loss advocates say. Find ways to make nutritional food flavorful so you don't feel that you're depriving yourself. And what about the age-old question, keeping record of your food?
So here's what Martha says, and she lost 180 pounds. She said, "My relationship with food has changed drastically. It's always been a source of joy and celebration, and it's also a frequent tactic for self-soothing. The thing that seems to best stop this in its tracks today is simply to track my food. If I do that regularly, food finds a place of normalcy in my life."
Tracking seems like a good idea. My job on this program is to track the time, and we need to take another break. But what are a few more of the keys to weight loss? We'll find that answer when we return on the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
Conflict is a part of every healthy relationship. How you deal with conflict is what will either grow or destroy relationships. Do you avoid? Maybe you become highly emotional and then regret what you said or did. Getting control of our emotions is not always easy, but it is possible. Hi, this is Dr. Linda Mental, and I wrote the book We Need to Talk in order to help all of us deal better with conflict. We Need to Talk, available at bookstores and online where books are sold. Hey, it's Dr. Linda Mental from the Dr. Linda Mental Radio Show. Join the conversation for our shows by commenting on questions and show topics posted on social media. Go to myfaithradio.com, click on my show, and leave your comments in the comment box. Or click on one of the social media icons and leave your comments on Facebook or Twitter. We'd love to hear from you.
You're listening to the Dr. Linda Mental Show, and Dr. Linda has written numerous books. One that might help, since today we're talking about weight loss and changing your relationship with food, is Press Pause Before You Eat. Check out that book and others on her website, drlindamental.com, and follow Dr. Linda on Twitter at Dr. Linda Mental and other social media as well. All right, if you're just joining us, we're talking about weight loss tips from people who have lost more than 100 pounds, and this next one made me laugh. The man who said this, Jack, is a sports editor and lost 132 pounds. He says he treated his body like a truck.
Well, he had a great revelation that's really important to weight loss and is the main theme of my book. This is what he said. "I never really looked at food as the enemy, but obviously it was. I now look at my food consumption like this. My body is a machine, much like my truck. If I put bad gas and bad oil in my truck, it won't run the way it is supposed to, and it will eventually break down. I couldn't continue to eat bad food and expect my body to work the way it was intended. I feel better now than I did when I was in my 20s. If food kills me now, it's going to be because a little Debbie truck hit me while out doing my daily walk and not because I sat on the couch stuffing my face." That's great. Food is not the enemy. Seeing his body like a truck was really a good way to think about changing his relationship with food.
The thing is, after losing 130 pounds, he should think more of his body as a car,
not a truck. Well, maybe he likes drugs. Yeah.
Our next tip from those who lost over 100 pounds comes from people who say they became mindful eaters. Now, what do they mean?
So here's a tip from Rose, age 36, who's a weight loss coach, and this is what she says. "I've always enjoyed food and cooking. I was an adventurous eater. But when I made the decision to become mindful about my eating, the variety of food I ate expanded tremendously. I ate large volumes of food and found ways to integrate nutrient-dense foods. My mission was to keep everything in my diet and use something like dark chocolate as my 'you got through your day' reward." "When I was losing weight, I did explore the layers of my relationship with food because sometimes I reached for a lot of sugar and sometimes I ate because I was bored or tired. Some of those layers involved grief. Some involved aha moments. Some involved pure joy. For me, it's all about exploring the heart-brain connection, and the food is what connects those. I went on a deep dive into my emotional journey, and the work that I did really solidified the sustainability of the weight loss." So, Chris, she was mindful of what she was eating and what she was putting in her mouth.
Well, can it sometimes be okay to reach for food when you need comfort? It seems most of us will not give that up completely.
I, think that's a great question, because the all or nothing thinking of I can never comfort myself with food will make you want to do it all the more.
All right.
The point is not to make food a comfort as a daily pattern. So here's a chef who lost 100 pounds who said, during my childhood and early 20s, I would use food as a way to comfort myself, to combat overwhelming grief and loss, to just help me get through the day. Now I look at food as a way to truly nourish my body, to help facilitate joy in my life, and to create opportunities to connect with my friends and families. Sometimes I need the comfort of a bowl of pasta shared with my wife and son. Sometimes I need a little fiber-filled green smoothie to start my day. I think that when I decided I could be both a healthy eater and a happy eater, I finally made peace with my relationship with food. Again, it's a mindset change, and it helps to be forgiving once in a while.
I think what you're saying is you don't want food to be a coping tool for life.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'm going to give us one more thought here from someone who lost 170 pounds, and she said it like this. Throughout my weight loss process, I learned that I was using food as a coping tool. I ate for any emotion, happiness, stress, frustration, anger, and depression. Food was always there for me, as horrible as it sounds. So I formed a relationship with it. Food tasted good. It was easily accessible, and it made me feel good in the moment. I still have tendencies to turn to food for any of those feelings, but I do try to be more mindful and find other ways to deal with my daily stress. Food addiction is hard to fight and to overcome. This process has not been easy, and it will never be easy. Every day is a struggle to make good, healthy choices. But today, I feel amazingly strong. I feel strong. I feel healthy. I feel alive, and I feel beautiful.
That's a good quote.
I love that.
It seems like a good takeaway from those that we've quoted who have lost 100 pounds is that changing the way we think about our relationship with food is critical to being successful.
It really is. And I think as we close our time together, I'd like everyone to consider this quote from one of my chapters in Press Pause Before You Eat. Eating is not merely a material pleasure. Eating well gives a spectacular joy to life and contributes immensely to goodwill and happy companionship. It is of great importance to morale. So when we eat for the right reasons and reset our relationship with food, we can be successful on our weight loss journey. Hopefully, the comments that you've heard from those who've lost 100 pounds can really help you rethink your relationship to food. And don't forget how important faith is in this journey, as it gives strength and it helps us with the power to overcome. So we hope our tips have helped a few of you. I hope we've encouraged you. This is a process. Be kind to yourself as you take that weight loss journey. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Many thanks to our producer and social media director, Norm Mintel, our engineer and my co-host, Chris Weigel, who makes the show a conversation. From all of us here at Faith Radio, hey, we'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we're here, we're doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone. Thanks for listening to the Dr. Linda Mintel podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Dr. Linda Mintel Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and helping us grow the impact of the Dr. Linda Mintel Show.